Hi, Dan.
Hi, Jason.
I just got back from several days in Oregon looking at school, potential schools for my son. So I don't know what's going on. I did have some time at the airport yesterday. I posted a Shelley Brisbane story about how she's gotten into the Stream Deck stuff for her radio stuff.
Yeah, that was cool. She also started talking about stuff in there where it's like I realized you and I are both podcast editors. I think my podcast editing skills are probably not the best. I do it a lot, but I do editing stuff. And she was talking at one point about like, yeah, we record people via FaceTime, but it ends up with weird artifacts. But you can remove those with a parabolic curve. And I was like, oh, you've lost me. I'm gone. that is audio engineering pay grade.
Her audio engineer set an EQ for their FaceTime calls that they can just apply. I have that.
That's cool.
I had Jim Metzendorf make a bunch of EQ presets for me a long time ago that I still use because I didn't know anything about it. And I was like, can you just set these for me? And he said, yeah, sure, I'll do that for you. What I liked about it, because I think this says everything about like institutions and slow pace of innovation versus fast pace of innovation, is when, before the pandemic, they're doing the work in the studio of the radio station that Shelley works at. And she's supposed to take the recordings and get them nice and good. And it's a flat mono recording. So she has to select when the other person is talking and then do this thing on that. Then when the pandemic hits, their host goes home and is using home equipment. And because it's not their studio workflow anymore, he's able to record his voice on the left track and the recorded person that he's interviewing on the right track, which allows Shelley, now that she has separate... Shelley. I also have a friend named Shelley who I talked to yesterday because she lives in Portland and that's where we're. Shelley just selects track B and goes fix, and it's fixed. And that's hilarious, right? That it's like, oh, thank goodness that we're at home during the pandemic and I can have a better, more appropriate audio workflow for my professional radio work. And yet I nodded at that part. I was like, yeah, I'm sure there's a perfectly good reason why all their studios only let you record in mono with everything flattened out, but it's bad and you shouldn't do it. But I'm sure they had a reason. I used to be on the radio a lot. The host who really liked me retired, so I'm not on the radio as much anymore. But I asked him at some point about like, are you guys gonna do, like, I could do FaceTime, I could do Zoom, I could do higher quality audio, and they said, we don't want it. We like the idea that if you're not in the studio, you sound like you're at the end of a phone line. So we put you at the end of a phone line. I'm like, all right, radio. Well, you guys know what you're doing, I guess.
Oh,
all right.
I do a radio bit every week, with a station in St. Louis. Why? A weird story that involves our former colleague Chris Breen used to do a radio segment,
yes, with,
and he handed it off to me when he went to Apple and could no longer do it. And I've been doing it pretty regularly for several years now. And for a little while, there was a time when one of their producers, who seemed to really be on top of this, had a VoIP setup, although it was using a SIP client. And that piece of software was one of the worst pieces of software I've ever used. Mm. It has gone back since then to using just the phone call.
The phone.
Which, yeah. I answer because I have my mic on my Mac. I answer on my Mac so I can just use it like I'm on a podcast segment. And it does sound better than if I'm just, you know, talking into my iPhone, because I had it once in a while accidentally answer on my iPhone instead of my Mac.
Uh-huh.
And I'll switch it over to the Mac and I'll be like, oh yeah, you sound way better now. But I've also listened back to recordings once in a while. It's like, this still sounds like garbage.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, okay, radio, whatever. Like, I get it on one level, but on another level, like when I started doing my hits on KCBS here in San Francisco, they would be like, can you be on a landline? I'd say yes, I can do that. It's a cordless phone, but it's on a landline and it'll probably be fine. Like, we don't want a cell phone because cell phones are spotty. It's like, okay, I don't have a landline anymore, guys.
Yeah.
It's going to be on the cell phone or nothing. Or I could talk to you with my voice over IP I'm sure there are radio stations out there that have gotten with this program, right? In fact, the pandemic drove a lot of this. TV, certainly, right? TV was like, well, only way we're getting people on video is if we use Zoom. So I guess we're going to use Zoom.
And it's funny to me. Sometimes I'll hear on NPR or something when they're doing an interview, they'll be like, so-and-so joined us via Skype. And I'm like, I also remember that didn't Skype have a weird thing for a while where you had to like mention they
that's
were
what
on
that is.
Skype?
That's what it is.
Is that
if
what that is?
If you're commercially using Skype for your broadcast
so
and stuff,
funny.
You're supposed to mention that you actually used Skype.
I still
ask
find
for
that
it by name.
But it is, you know what? And it sounds better in a lot of cases than when people are on the phone. It does have its artifacts and whatever, but it's no different than I've definitely heard interviews where people's phones drop, right? You know, and they're like, oh, we've lost so-and-so, you know, we'll try to get them back. And it's like, all these things have problems. Just, you know, your choice of trade-offs is weird.
Yeah, exactly. It's, I don't know, it's a resistance, I guess, to dealing with the new technology. But it's like, but the new technology could help you.
And
that's
and
what I think about.
The new technology is not that new anymore. That's the other thing. It's like, VoIP clients have been around for more than a decade, you know, and in like common usage, not just in like, you know, oh wow, there's this weird thing where you can make telephone calls over the internet, right? Like, I mean, everybody's been using Skype and FaceTime now for like 10 years.
Yeah, it's not new tech, but that's what made me laugh ultimately about Shelley's host getting better tech when he went home and used his own laptop, right? Because that just says something about how, you know, we put the system in and now we can't change it, or we're resistant to change. And I don't know.
Yeah.
It's a very, very funny thing.
Your point about institutional resistance is good. What I mean, I think about, I was at a event with a bunch of authors a couple of weeks ago where they were talking and somebody asked about what the software they used. And a couple of them do write in like Word, which I find hilarious because some of them write quite long books, and Word is notorious for being like, I see you have a 100,000 word file. Nope, I'm just not doing that. But even those, one of them said they use Scrivener, which I use for a lot of my novel stuff. You still end up in Word eventually is the thing, because all editorial stuff in every publisher I've ever encountered uses Word. It's the lingua franca, right, of publishing. And is it the best? It's definitely not the best. It may be better than the alternatives, I guess. You know, it's the worst except for all the other ones. But it is funny to me that it's like, well, but we've always used Word, right?
Yeah.
It's established. That's just we're going to use. All our processes are developed around that. And even at times when it's frustrating, I want to throw up my hands because Word has got its own little peculiarities. And even in cases where they don't use the things in Word that I would think, you know, there's like weird ways that they have use the features in like slightly jury-rigged fashion or whatever. It's like, oh yeah, put your comments in here and it's like, but there's a comment feature. No, we won't want to do that. Okay. So yeah, we're all bound into the software that our predecessors in some ways have forced us to use.
It's at Macworld, I tried to get everybody to use Markdown. Remember how well that went?
It went okay. There were some of us who were very happy about it. Like basically all of us who had started writing for the web were like, yeah, Markdown, duh. But yeah, there were some.
All the people in Microsoft Word who have style sheets were like, I don't understand what you're talking about here. I'm like, well, marked up Word is not great for the web.
Right,
but you can import Markdown as HTML and import it into InDesign and get it for print. So really, if you have to pick one, you should probably pick the one that you could use forever. No, there was it was not. What it ended up doing is I tried to get everybody to use Markdown, and what we ended up with is it allowed using Markdown to be allowed. Right, that was what it got. It didn't like become the lingua franca as much as we might have liked, but it did allow it to be used, which was something. We also had a whole thing about like, were we going to be able to do Markdown in the CMS? And in the end, I think that never happened, where we had to run Markdown and then paste the HTML into the CMS.
Yeah, we had the scripts.
Although
now we can.
Uses WordPress now, and so you can paste in Markdown, and on the fly, it's converted into native.
Boy, that's the only good thing about that editor.
Yeah, I mean, like for those WordPress nerds out there, I'll just say they're using their fancy new whatever it is, Gutenberg. Fancy WordPress editor. I let it be known the Six Colors team uses the Classic Editor plugin, which it's is don't give me your WYSIWYG garbage. It reminds me of there was a setting in Eudora, the email app from way back, that was Waste Cycles Drawing Trendy 3D Junk. That was the name of it. And if that box was checked, you got like shades of gray on the interface, and it didn't look like it was from the Mac from 1984. But I think of it every now and then, and the Gutenberg WYSIWYG thing. It's just one of those where I'm like, I don't want to see. I want to see my code. I want to write. But it's fine. I mean, it's written. Most people don't, and that's why they wrote it that way. But we here at Six Colors are classic editor types. That's
we're writing close to the metal. That's
we
what
are.
We're all about.
And we use Jetpack, so it converts the markdown into HTML. Yeah. But
I do the same thing on my own personal WordPress blog.
Good man.
I also have the classic editor.
Good man. That's the way to do it. Yeah, classic editor until they force us out of it somehow, in which case, I guess we'll be like what the Macworld editor looks like. It is funny that after years, we're really off of it now, but that's fine. I don't even know where I am. I was on a plane yesterday. It is funny that after all those years of spending lots of money on employing lots of programmers to develop a complicated one-off CMS for all of the consumer portion of IDG, because there was a separate project for the enterprise portion of IDG, that after all of that, they're just using WordPress now.
It seems the way that everything's going.
Well, there was a moment where a lot of executives were like, ooh, we're going to make our own platform, and then we're going to sell it, and we're going to be in the platform business of journalism. But, you know, anybody who's ever followed this stuff for any length of time knows building your own CMS is madness. Never do that. But people do.
As I'm sure that I've told the story before, that was my last job before transitioning to being a writer, was working at a nonprofit research program in which my job was literally building websites that had like CMS, and it was the most jury-rigged bananas code ever. And my last project was trying to create, essentially build a CMS that could be easily deployed, that it was like totally, basically it was like, I look back in retrospect, this was 2003 through 2005, essentially building something like WordPress or Movable Type, where it was like, you can use this for anything, and we can just spin up an instance really easily and dump all this stuff into it and have it good to go. And that project was appropriately called Grail, which I named because it was something that would never be achieved. I left before that project was anywhere near being done, and was never going to be done, because let me tell you how big our development team was on it. Two people. And I decided, I will be working on this project for the rest of my career if I stay here, because it will never be finished. So I left, because that sounded like hell.
Yeah, our good friend Greg Noss says he's written at least two CMSs.
Yeah, everyone does it.
He is the way he is now. Yeah. He's a monster, because he was ruined by doing that. And we at one point implemented one of his CMSs for a client. We did me and Lisa Schmeiser and a couple other people, we did a client website build, and we used his CMS. And the thing I felt the worst thing about after we were done is that basically we walked away and said, here's Greg's CMS, good luck. And like, that was it. Like, this website comes with its own CMS. It's custom, it's a one-off, and there's no support. And I think back to it now, and I'm like, what did we do to those people? But that was just how it was back in the day.
No one's heard from them since, so everything's fine, probably.
No, they died. They all died. Yeah. It was a tragedy. Now, let's see. Baseball season started yesterday, too, by the way. And that was the other thing I posted from the airport, from the Eugene, Oregon airport, was a link to the new press release, where the day before... You do get the sense now, I got to say, you do get the sense that maybe maybe it was the lockout, the 100-day lockout of baseball, but like the announcements about Apple's Friday Night Baseball series have been coming kind of late in the game. Now, maybe they knew about it all along, but it, you know, because they had to do pre-planning for all this stuff. But it is funny that we only found out like who was calling the games the day before they were going to be called. Obviously, they knew before then, but their rollout seems maybe a little rushed. Even if their planning wasn't rushed, their rollout seems a little rushed, possibly because of the baseball lockout.
Right.
Anyway, we got that information, so we know who their announcers are. I'm unclear whether the announcers of tomorrow's games will, or today's games now, will be the same for every Friday night baseball game on Apple. If these announcing teams are going to recur or not, because they're using a pool of people who also work for MLB Network, because MLB Network is producing this for Apple. And they're producing it for Apple. It's not like running on the MLB Network. They're like the internal production team for Major League Baseball. They will do this, and they've got these announcers. So I don't know if Melanie Newman, who is one of the Orioles TV announcers, I don't know if she's going to be the lead on all of the Friday Night Baseball games or not, but she is going to be the lead on the Nets Nationals game on Friday night. And then let's see, who's the other Steven Nelson is the play-by-play guy on the second game with Katie Nolan and Hunter Pence. Everybody loves Underpants. Giants World Series winner, just saying. Hunter Pence, he's great. He's a character. Hunter Pence likes it when you put his name on a sign. So I don't know whether those are like, okay, well, locked in now. We're going to get Nelson with Nolan and Pence, and we're going to get Newman with Chris Young and Hannah Kaiser. Like, unclear.
Are they going to mix it up? Are they different people?
Yeah. Are they going to use whoever happens to be nearby? Like, Melanie Newman is an Orioles announcer, and this is the game in D.C., so she's nearby. Or is this like a job where like Melanie Newman's just not going to be available for the Orioles on Friday nights because she's going to be traveling for Apple? I don't know. And are they traveling or are they in a studio somewhere and we're pretending that they're there? I would think Apple would kind of want the whole package of them being there, but it's a mystery. So I guess we'll see as it goes, and that's how we're going to have to figure it out. I saw somebody on Twitter the other day asking, are they going to be in 4K? And there's nothing about it. They talk about spatial audio and interactive stuff and overlays and all sorts of other stuff that they're going to do, because presumably there won't be commercials, or if there are breaks, it'll be just like promos for Apple TV stuff. That'll be fascinating to watch. My thought about 4K is just that, you know, they don't come in on Thursday and wire up an entire stadium and put their truck in the back lot and all of that. They use the way baseball stuff generally works is there's a home team set up and a road team set up, and they've got cameras positioned for both, and they've got a truck for both. And the same, like when your team goes to San Diego, assuming you're not a Padre fan, your team goes to San Diego and plays San Diego, and you're watching the broadcast on your local channel for your team, you know, the camera people operating that are the road camera people who work in San Diego all year round. They're not your traveling camera people.
Right.
And the people in the truck, I think, I don't know. I don't think that they are. I think they are the road director and stuff as well. And so you might get for playoff games, the World Series, and maybe even for some of these, they said that they're going to bring some special cameras and stuff. So there may be some special tech that's brought in because it's Friday Night Baseball. But what I'm saying is I don't think most of these things are set up, or at least not in every stadium, for a 4K video workflow, which is why Apple can't just say, I want it in 4K, and they can flip a switch, because they'll be like, yeah, actually at Nationals Park, they can't do that, or, you know, or wherever it is. And maybe at T-Mobile Park in Seattle, they can totally do 4K, but they can't do 4K in Cleveland. And you're just like, that's just, so I'm going to be interested to see if they do some things in 4K and not, or if they just might don't be talk like, about it.
Tonight's broadcast is presented in stunning 4K, doo-doo, thanks to blah blah blah. Yeah,
but not the next, but not the next right. game, because that will be. So I don't know. It's all a mystery, right? Other than what they've announced, we haven't seen it. It's they've turned on like their linear stream of baseball stuff on Apple TV Plus, but beyond that, it's just kind of how's this going to play out? What does it look like when Apple broadcasts a nationwide pair of baseball games live? Tonight's the night, so we're gonna find out. And I'm excited because, you know, it's two things that I'm interested in. So we'll see.
Two tastes that taste great together.
Well, do they? Yeah. Maybe they don't.
Maybe they taste bad together. That's true.
I don't know.
It could be like chocolate steak. Yeah. Well, I mean, right? Two great tastes. I don't know. They taste great together.
Yeah, could you do a mole on a...
Sure. I mean, you could do like a carne asada with a mole probably, so why not?
Yeah, but still.
But like just straight up like melted hot fudge? No.
Oh, wow. On a steak? That's the you know, A1
slathered
steak sauce?
Yeah, this is like B2 steak sauce.
Z infinity. Anything else going on this week? Like I said, I was
gone. WWDC.
Oh, yeah.
That actually happened. They announced it.
And guess what, everybody? There will be a live in-person event for WWDC.
Yeah. Wild. How strange is that?
For invitation only for a very small group of friends and developers, and it'll be at Apple Park, and my understanding is outside. Probably a rainbow stage kind of event for those people to watch as the video plays.
Yeah, exactly. Well, first of all, yeah, that's the first thing to say. They're not doing the keynote outdoors and on stage in front of these people, right? That's just how they're going to produce.
I'm still not 100% convinced that they're not going to do the keynote at Steve Jobs Theater with a limited media audience invited, but they haven't announced
possible.
That.
I mean, they wouldn't have to more than a week in advance,
well,
right?
Think,
that's
I
how
think
we
for
do
that,
things now.
For that, they probably need 2 weeks because it's in person, right?
I know,
like, they would
I
have
know,
to
but
do
maybe...
That.
Maybe Apple still loves the drop everything, you're coming out.
Maybe so. But you know, it also may just be exactly what it was the last few years, and there won't be that. But that's my big theory. My big idea is that ultimately there will be a one-day media event where they'll bring the media in, they'll see the keynote, they'll be given a bunch of demos, they'll do the State of the Union, maybe even live, and that'll be like their little wrapped-up media package for people, and that could be in person in the Steve Jobs Theater eventually. But I think that's it.
That's the
may not be it at all this year.
Of what this, I think they're starting to lay some groundwork for the idea that, look, in the future, there may be WWDC that involves live in-person portions. But I think it seems unlikely at this point that they'll ever go back to what they were doing before, wholly, right? Because I sort of draw the analogous line between this and when Apple dropped out of the Macworld Expo trade shows back in 2009. You know, with the decision, like, look, we don't need to do this anymore. And I think there's a strong argument that when it comes to WWDC, the advantages of a remote event are so high in terms of if you are really trying to reach the biggest developer, you know, audience possible, removing the barriers of having to spend a lot of money and go to a place and making all this stuff available to people remotely, I think is just, it's kind of too hard to give up. Because it's so good for accessibility, if nothing else. And it saves them a ton of money. They don't have to rent a giant convention center and have people who take all this time off work to come down and be on the, you know, like leading sessions and stuff, right? They can do it all kind of asynchronously for the most part. It reduces their overhead so much. Now, part of me wonders the same thing about the keynote, right? Like you're throwing out the idea of the keynote being attended by live press. And I think there's definitely a part of that Apple misses. I'm sure they love having an audience. I'm sure they love having that energy that you get like from a live performance. But it's weighed against the idea that when you do your keynote and you record it all ahead of time, it's perfect. Yeah. And that is a thing that's also hard for them to give up because the idea of being able to never have a demo that doesn't work quite right or have somebody flub a line or...
It's been a long time since a live Apple keynote had any of those
things. Indeed it has. But the temptation for a company like Apple where the image is so polished has got to be high, especially with, you know, just the idea like, look, we can bring all these other people in, and even if they're not people who have been the most polished performers in the past, we can keep doing takes till they get it right. I think that has a benefit as well, because it allows them to cast a much wider net in terms of the people they have on stage. There's a lot of benefits for it, and I can see why they might be weighing the idea, like, well, do we want to do a live person event and get the benefits of that, or do we want to do a pre-recorded event and get the benefits of that? I don't know. They don't have to make this decision this year, but someday they're going to have to make it, because it will be feasible to have in-person events again, and it's just a question of whether it makes sense or not. But then again, maybe they'll all be in the metaverse, Jason, in a couple of years. We'll all be in our Apple headsets.
It'll be whatever Apple calls the metaverse, though.
Whatever Apple
It'll
calls
it. It'll just be the, you know, happy rainbow reality or whatever. I don't know.
Wow, that is, it's catchy.
You sure? You can use that. If you want to. All right, well, I'm back in the saddle now that it's Friday. Weird week for me. I worked Monday, I worked Friday. I didn't work in the middle. I went on a trip. It's very strange. But baseball.
That's very strange.
Baseball. For those who care and those who don't. It's like, Jason, why do you talk about baseball? Baseball isn't related to Apple. Oh, friends, guess what? It is. It's actually related. I'm going to go on the talk show one of these days, and we're going to talk about baseball for 2 or 3 hours. And it'll be relevant, because it'll sort of be Apple related.
Because you have a microphone, and people have to listen to every single word you say.
That's right. They can't stop, won't stop. Mm-hmm. Something like that. Mm-hmm. All right, well. We'll be back next week. Probably less baseball talk. Maybe more baseball talk. Probably about the same amount of baseball talk. Let's be honest. But until then, bye, Dan.
Bye, Jason.